Hey everybody, back in Colorado, it's fucking cold as fuck. This microphone's hurting my hand. It feels kind of good. I don't know why the airplane, it seems like the agreed upon temperature in the airplane is like 78 degrees. Seems a little warm. I always have this sort of argument with myself and no one else, but I think that I'm always in favor of, like, why don't we keep things a little colder? Because people who are cold can always put on a sweater. People who are warm, like, when you're warm and you're just on an airplane, there is fucking nothing you can do about it. You're just trapped. If I was cold on the plane, I could put my coat on. I don't know. It just seems, being too cold seems like a solvable problem, where being too warm, there's nothing you can do. In my office, like in the summer, it always gets real hot in the summer because basically they never fix the whatever, air conditioning and stuff. It's like this stupid thing that this jerk off does, where it's like let's be greener by having the temperature range go much higher and a little lower. And you're like, well, that's easy to say when you don't work in this building, you know what I mean? How about you do that at home? And encourage the rest of us to do it at home. Because I don't really have a choice here. Anyway, well, I had a couple of controversial topics to talk about. They're not really controversial. One is, I feel like it's not controversial at all. The other one is controversial, and I have an opinion on the controversy. So let's start with one. I saw a video of Fergie singing the national anthem, which people are saying was offensive. Now, I watched it, and it's very bad. I mean, let's not get away from that. It was terrible, right? Now, this is, I think, part of what's dumb about when you ask a celebrity to sing the national anthem. Because it's like, is Fergie known for making music? Yes. Is she known for having, like, an amazing singing voice? Not really. You know what I mean? She's not like, okay, the easiest example. You compare Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears. Christina Aguilera, known for having the voice. Britney Spears, I mean, talented, but does she have that huge range? Is she fucking the second coming of Freddie Mercury? Nah, not really. So, like, it seems like a foolish idea to put someone in that position of singing that song when they're not a singer. You know, or if it's an amateur, that's fine. So she really jazzed it up, you know. It was a little like "Happy Birthday, Mr. President" or something. And then the camera pans around and looks at the faces of these basketball players who I guess are like trying not to laugh. You can tell some of them are like, "What the fuck is this? Like, this is terrible." And they're not wrong. But at the same time, I was like, I mean, you guys are playing in the NBA All-Star game. How serious is this? You're playing with like a bunch of people that you don't normally play basketball with to win the All-Star game. And so it's like, oh yeah, me and these 50 other dudes won this fucking pickup basketball game, basically. And I never understood the All-Star game and stuff like that, because it's like, I guess in theory, you're seeing the best basketball players all together, right? But I think in practice, it's more like, I don't know, you just see a bunch of guys playing basketball, and it's like, you know, I'd rather watch this guy with his regular team, because they have kind of a thing going from years of practice and knowing each other that doesn't really come through in the All-Star game, right? I mean, I'm not a sports guy, but this is how it occurs to me as being stupid and a bad concept. But whatever. You know, play the All-Star game. I'm just saying, like, they're kind of like laughing at her, and I'm laughing at them too, because I'm like, I think that what you guys are doing here ain't that serious. You know, the All-Star game for basketball ain't this like fucking, it's not a military funeral, okay? Let's all calm down. But it was bad, but I wouldn't say it was offensive. And I think this is where I feel like there's the controversy that I'm not really into. I think someone could say it's offensive, I suppose, because it's like, you know, not true to the anthem. It's not like traditional. But I don't think that it was so non-traditional as to be wildly offensive. You know, if the national anthem has to be sung, you know, the way it's written, as written, let's not put any flair in it, I'm fine with that. Like, let's not change the tempo. Let's not do this. It's the national anthem. This is how it's done. That's cool. But then that's the rule. If we're going to let people change it, then guess what? There's going to be sometimes people change it for the worse. And, you know, we're not going to like it. I mean, this thing gets sung before every fucking sports event ever. Every monster truck event, I assume, having never been to one. Every, like, NASCAR, you know what I mean? So if we let people do it however they want, there's going to be some that we don't like. There's probably going to be more that we don't like than ones we do like. And also, I mean, I don't really remember a lot of iconic national anthem performances. You know, like, people will say, oh, Jimi Hendrix did an awesome national anthem. And I'm like, it was fine. You know, it was fine. But whatever. The thing I thought was interesting about it is the use of the term offensive, you know, or people being offended by it. Because I think what has happened here is like, so I've complained about the fact that we call something offensive, you know, we look for ways in which something is offensive because it's just not very good. And when something's just not very good, I don't know why we spend so much time trying to figure out how it's offensive. If it's not very good to begin with, I don't think it's worth wasting very much time on. You know what I mean? If it's kind of just like throwaway garbage anyway, why are we proving that it's also offensive? I'm like, I mean, I was with you in saying like, I thought this, you know, what fill in the blank book, movie, whatever was stupid, but it's also offensive. And it's like, I thought about this. This is kind of what I see happening with, like, Ready Player One right now. Which is, like, people are trying to find ways in which that's an offensive idea, or the story is offensive, or there's offensive passages in it. And I'm like, look, this is pretty much an innocuous book. And if you don't like what's going on in it, if you think it's a stupid book, or you think it's a stupid-looking movie or whatever, that's fine. But you don't have to prove that it's offensive in order to make your point here. You don't have to prove it's offensive for it to be bad. It can just be shitty. It can be a, you know, C-minus movie without being offensive in any way. I mean, if it just sucks, it sucks. If you're like, I'm not really into nostalgia porn, that's fine. You don't have to prove that nostalgia porn is, like, bad for society, or, you know, bad for one group of individuals or another, or it's like, oh, this is just fanboys who, you know, think they're nice guys and push themselves on women or something. Like, it can just be not very good. And that's fine. Like, you don't have to prove that it's offensive in order for it to be not good. And what I think has happened with this national anthem is we've seen a reversal now, where something is just not good, and therefore it's called offensive, as opposed to the normal sort of like, something is offensive and therefore not good. Which is interesting, because I think the original way to do it, right, was something is offensive and therefore not good. Like, that's something that we see a lot right now, right? And I think that that can be true, but isn't always true. And, you know, I think something can be offensive and still good. But now we've seen the reversal, which is something is really bad and therefore must be offensive. Because, like, how else could it be bad unless it's offensive? To which I'm like, because it sucked. Like, sonically, as a sound, that went in my ear holes, it sucked. It made me feel nothing. It made me embarrassed to hear it. It was like difficult to watch. It was very, you know, it was like you're cringing watching this because you're just like, oh my God, this is horrible. You know, like this poor woman is halfway through the song. You're like, when is this going to end? Like, I want this to end for her and for me. I want this to end for everyone. But, you know, it's not offensive. I just didn't find anything offensive about it. So I guess I was offended that people were calling it offensive because I was like, hey, maybe let's save offensive offense for things that are actually offensive. You know, when somebody goes up there and throws in something, you know, when they end the national anthem and say, let's play some basketball, and like nobody's really cheering for it, and you know, you can tell she was really passionate, that's embarrassing and it's sad. But like, let's save offensive for when somebody gets up there and ends the national anthem and then yells like white power. I mean, that's offensive. That is offensive. Someone doing a shitty job on the national anthem is not. And here's the other thing about it, like, I think even the argument that she kind of took this song and tried to use it, you know, poorly. Number one, I think sometimes, well, okay, this is a separate thing, but I think that, like, lots of people have used the national anthem as a platform to showcase their skill. And I think it's the failure of it that we really hate. This was this, like, whole idea I've had of, like, sexiness in the world. And I think that the thing about sexiness, the real key is, like, we hate when people try to be sexy and fail. But we like it when people try to be sexy and succeed. And then one is great and the other is, like, an atrocity, an abomination. And my example of this is Miley Cyrus v. Britney Spears. Miley Cyrus did that, you know, twerking dance and all that shit, and everyone was like, that was so gross, and like, I don't know, it was just weird and whatever. And it was her attempt to be sexy, which we didn't like, and it was like, oh, this is like a child, and this doesn't make sense, and whatever. And when Britney Spears was dancing around with a snake, we were all like, yes, what an art, she's the next Madonna. You know what I mean? And it's like, well, it's because she succeeded at being sexy. I don't think we hate them or like them for exactly what they did. I think it's, we like Britney Spears because she succeeded, but we hate Miley Cyrus because she failed and wasn't sexy. And I think that reminds us of ourselves and how we don't like feeling that way. We don't like feeling. Is there much worse in life than when you're trying to be sexy and you fail? Like, I think this is part of why many of us don't spend a lot of time trying to be sexy, because, oh my God, there's nothing worse than when you're, like, trying to be sexy and completely fail. It's, like, embarrassing to even talk about that way, right? But it's like, you come out of the other room, you're wearing something sexy, and you slip on a banana peel. Way worse than if you just came out of the other room in a robe and slipped on a banana peel, right? And I guess that's assuming you don't find a robe sexy. I don't find a robe sexy, but that's me. It reminds me of like a 1980s comedy mom. And robes all just, they look like they're made of the same material of a bathroom rug. And you wear it in the bathroom, it just seems like a poor way to go about your life, wearing absorbent cloth in the bathroom. So anyway, I think that like what we don't like about Fergie's rendition, what really repels us about it is that she tried to be like a singer and she failed. But is that offensive? No. It's painful to watch. It sucks. We don't like it. Like, we definitely do not like seeing that and watching it. And we don't like that it happened. But it's just not offensive. Like, I just think that's such a weird way of looking at it. And such a, like, I feel like right now way of looking at things. Which is, like, it's not always this way, but to say that, you know, poor quality and offensive go hand in hand. Or, like, I think offensiveness is kind of, has become a very easy way for critics to critique something that's subjective. Like, is this movie good or not? That's hard to say. But it's offensive in this way. You know, it doesn't pass the Bechdel test, therefore it can't be that good. It doesn't, you know, the female lead is not strong, therefore it's offensive. There's only one person of color in the movie, and that's offensive. You know what I mean? Like, this sort of thing. It's like, it's a way to kind of rubricatize, like, a movie and say, oh, okay, well, it's offensive in this way, and therefore not as good. I think it's kind of lazy on the part of critics. I mean, sometimes it's interesting, because sometimes someone will bring up a good point that, oh, well, you know, not having this person in this role is problematic because of XYZ, and you're like, okay, I get it. Like, that makes sense to me, and that's I wouldn't know that outside of the context of this movie, and also that doesn't just seem like some cockamamie theory that you invented to write an article. That's like a legitimate thing. But a lot of times, it is some cockamamie theory someone invented to write an article. And that's not my favorite thing. So anyway, I'm coming down on the national anthem as not offensive. Not good, but not offensive. So I kind of agree with both sides. It sucked. It was shitty. But it just, it's not, there's nothing offensive about that. I mean, if you're offended by that, I don't know how you get through life. If you're offended by a poor rendition of the national anthem, like, how do you even get through the day? Jesus Christ. Just like anything done poorly is offensive. I mean, give me a break. Let's see how you spend 8 hours a day at work. You don't do anything half-assed. You don't do anything less than maximum effort. So that was number one. Number two is kind of a library thing, and I guess I've just decided to be more open about talking about library things, because I, you know, whatever. So my sister and I were talking about something. Oh, she had emailed me a while back about prisons were, like, only allowing prisoners to buy books from these certain vendors who had very few titles and, like, nothing good, really, and it was... It looked to me like a scam where it's just basically like, okay, somebody who was involved in the prison system started this company to vend books to, you know, prisons. And they're like, well, we'll guarantee the safety and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, so then they can only buy from those, but the prices are, like, much higher, and also the selection is garbage. And this kind of exposed, like, a list of banned books in prisons. And so, you know, and there were some on there that were like, oh, fuck, I can't remember what it's called. It's this, like, kind of, it's a nonfiction book about how, like, I can't remember what it's called. It has a title that's something like the new Jim Crow. I think that's it. And basically how, like, prison and the prison system and the justice system function as the new Jim Crow. So, you know, it's a book that's basically about, like, the prison system is really fucking with black people. And then the prison system was like, well, we're not going to let people read that. But then I guess as soon as basically the, what's that organization that, like, the ACLU or something found out about this, immediately sent them a letter and was like, hey, we've got a problem with that. And we looked at your entire band's books list and we have a problem with a lot of them. There was something else on there that I thought was, like, hilariously stupid to ban. I can't even remember. It was like Harry Potter, the Golden Compass or something. It was, like, in that realm. And I was just like, I just can't see why. I mean, I know the Golden Compass had a whole controversy about it being, like, anti-Christian or something. It wasn't even that, though, the Golden Compass. It was something for that, like, age group, maybe, or that reading level that I was like... You know, it'd be like banning the Chronicles of Narnia or something, and you're like, well, come on. I mean, that, you, why? How? What's happening? Now, a lot of the banned books list made sense. I mean, there are a lot of manuals on there about, like, you know, hand-to-hand combat and, you know, like, martial arts training and stuff. And I was like, I get that. You know, that doesn't seem like something that you need in prison. I mean, maybe you need it, but it doesn't seem like a great thing to have in a prison. And the rest of it was, like, pornographic, and I don't mean, like, erotic letters or something. It was, like, images. And it would be, here's what was weird that I didn't get. It would be, like, specific issues of, like, Penthouse issue da-da-da-da. And I was like, I wonder why this one in particular is banned. You know what I mean? What is it about this issue that's got everyone all up in arms? And I'm not sure. I couldn't figure it out. It's like someone was interviewed who's sending secret signals through the pornography or something, through pornographics. I don't know. I don't know the answers all the time, you know? So, anyway, we were talking about that, and as we're talking about it, we got on to talking about other stuff like censorship, right? And she was asking me this question, which is like, if a library doesn't buy a book, is that censorship? You know, because like, okay, a campus doesn't have to bring a speaker, right? They don't have to let a speaker be there, because the community there doesn't want the speaker, and so on and so forth. And, like, not paying them and not giving them a platform isn't the same as censorship. So would it be censorship to not get a book at the library, especially because people could still get it through interlibrary loan and so on? And I was like, well, funny you should ask that. I mean, short answer, yes, it would be. Now, here's the thing. We talked a little bit about Milo's book on here, right? So let's talk about Milo's book, and why I think it would be censorship to not buy it. Basically, it comes down to the difference between buying something for my personal collection and buying something for the use of the community. I might not like this. I might not want to read it. But that doesn't mean I'm prepared to say nobody should read it. And the only way I could even prepare myself to do that would be to read it. I mean, the only way I could really say, no, this should not be available, like this is total garbage, would be to read it. Like, how would I know? And the only things we've seen about it come from news sources that I would say are not, they come with their own bias, right? You go to Fox News, they're going to say, like, he's being censored. You go to whatever the opposite flavor of the day is, and they'll be like, look at this book, it's garbage. He's not being censored. I think you should also, there's something that I see a lot online, which is, like, that hate speech is not protected speech. I'm pretty sure it actually is. I think hate speech is still under the First Amendment. I think the only things are, like, fighting words, true threats, and, like, child pornography. And I think that's it. So I think, like, somebody saying something about a race or a type of people is not actually unprotected speech. So let's just start there. But let's put that aside. Let's put it aside. Because, like, I don't agree with the book. I don't agree with the guy from what I've seen. But, yeah, it would be censorship. Because here's the thing. I could not buy a book for the library because of a lot of different reasons, right? And it's not censorship. An example I use a lot when I'm teaching this is Madonna's sex book. This was kind of a famous one in libraries because a lot of libraries didn't buy it, and it kind of turned into this discussion. But the reason a lot of libraries didn't buy it is that it was very expensive, and it had a spiral binding, and anyone who works in a library knows that any spiral-bound book gets fucked up, like, in seconds. I'll also say, like, for example, Jenna Jameson's autobiography, which we had multiple copies of, because people would tear the pictures out all the time. This was kind of like a little bit pre-internet porn. Not completely, but a little. So, like, we bought it a few times and then stopped buying it. And it wasn't because we were censoring the material. It's because it's like, look, if we can only buy this and it only can stay on the shelf for like 3 days before it gets ruined, we can't keep buying it. Like, we would be idiots to... How many copies of Jenna Jameson's autobiography are we going to buy before it's shame on us? You know, or like, you could even... If that's happening, be like, let's not replace it for 6 months. You know, let's not worry about it. And that I wouldn't call censorship either, because I'm not saying the material can or should not be viewed by any individual. I'm saying we can't manage this in the library. Like, as an object, as a physical object, we can't manage this in the library. Now, ebooks are a great solution to this in some respects, because, like, yeah, an ebook's not going to get all fucked up. You can't tear the pages out. It's not a great solution in some respects because ebooks do favor economically advantaged individuals. Because those are the people who have, like, e-readers and large screens and things like that. You know, they have portable screens. They have everything. I mean, a lot of people have phones, but let's be honest. An ebook is more useful if you have Wi-Fi. It's more useful if you have a device. So it's not... It's not like the end-all be-all. It's not the answer just yet. Maybe someday. So that's one thing. The other thing is, like, would interlibrary loan be, like, couldn't you say, well, we don't have to buy it because we could get it on interlibrary loan? To which I say, you could, but again, you're being disingenuous. Like, all right, so if I didn't buy it because of the politics of it, that would be censorship. As opposed to, like, not buying it because it's an object, right? Because I don't like the politics of it, but, I mean, my politics are not the library's politics. The library doesn't have politics. That's kind of the point, is, like, we let people say shit. I don't know, we let people do things. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that, like, the library is doing a much better job upholding the principles of intellectual freedom than the university system is. Because the university system, you know, won't let people come speak. And maybe that's the right way to do it. Like, maybe the principle of intellectual freedom is not the, you know, pinnacle principle for them. And that's fine. Like, that's fine with me. You know, not that anyone asked, but I don't mind if that's the case. They have other considerations. I mean, people live there, right? People pay a lot more money into it. People are finding a sense of community, and students are finding themselves and, like, you know, trying to figure out who they are. So whatever. I mean, it's a different purpose. It's a different place. But if I was not buying something because I found it personally offensive, then that would be wrong. If I was not going to put something on the shelf that I had a reasonable expectation would be popular, and the reason I didn't put it on the shelf was because I thought that the ideas in it were offensive, that would be wrong. And, like, the thing that I would say to college campuses is, like, you know, I don't think that suppressing ideas is the answer. I don't think trying to figure out who makes a good arbiter for what is and isn't acceptable is an answer. I think the answer is, like, hey, if you have a conservative, offensive speaker come to your campus, you know, if that group buys that speaker and has them come, well, then you should try and make sure you can find someone to represent the other end of the spectrum. You know, find your most radical, hippie, lefty person. And go there, you know what I mean? I think having two books in the library is much better than having one. And I think two books is way better than having none. Even if one of those books is completely against how I feel. So that's, I think that's a big consideration in the library, that, and that's how I would apply it to the rest of the world, is like, well, maybe don't set yourself up to make the decision for everybody. Maybe make your decisions for your group, and then, you know, encourage others to make good decisions as well. And like, yeah, I mean, if they're bringing a shitty Milo to campus, be like, all right, that's cool. We have Milo coming. Who are we bringing to sort of be the, you know, the other voice? Let's bring another voice. They don't have to respond to what he said. They don't have to be talking to each other. It's just like, all right, let's just bring somebody else. Because I think the thing is with the colleges is like, I don't go to a college, so I don't really have a horse in that race. But I think it's wrong to, like, the thing that people forget about in intellectual freedom, right, is like, everyone uses the old saw of, you can say whatever you want and you've got the right to say it, which is true, but like, let's not forget that also, I think people have the right to listen to other people, you know what I mean? And whether or not they choose to absorb and act on that is a separate thing, but I think it's like, the same way that someone's got a right to talk about something, is I think people have a right to listen to something too. So I don't know. I feel like the thing is when you don't put that book on the shelf, you're not real. It's not about Milo's right to say something. It's about other people's right to avail themselves of that information, for whatever purpose they may have. You know, they may have the purpose of, I'll tell you a story. I got an interlibrary loan once it was almost like a zine. It was like a little pamphlet, and it was about how to use steroids, you know, like for bodybuilding purposes. And I legitimately got that because I did a medical librarianship in library school, right? And so I needed some material about that. It was like some project, I can't even really remember, but I had to do a paper, and you had to do research, and you had to use certain kinds of sources, right? And it was something like it had to be a first-person primary source. And I was like, okay, well, I need a source from somebody who has used steroids. Like, someone who admits to using it, who has done it, and da-da-da-da. And, you know, I got it through the library, and sure enough, and it worked out. But, you know, someone getting that might look and say, like, oh, so this guy's going to do steroids. This is a terrible thing. Why does the library have that? And it's like, I've got it because I'm doing a project. And, like, I should be able to get that information if I want to. And the way I feel is, like, you don't prevent people from using steroids by keeping information out there. You prevent people from using steroids by making clear what is good and bad information, and also giving them all the information and then letting them make their own choice. I just don't think you can stop people. I think you just gotta, like, give them the best possible chance to do things with the least, like, you just gotta give them the best chance. And the best chance, I think, comes from having the most information. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I just feel very strongly that, like, the information is the way to go. Like, if you've got the information, then you'll be fine. And if you don't have the information, it's going to get all fucked up. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just not a believer in, like, suppressing information or taking information or, you know, thoughts or theories or opinions away and not letting people view them. That's not my job. That's kind of the point here, right? My job is not to evaluate the information, the quality of it. My job is to make sure that what people want to read and hear and see is available, and that it's out there, and that they can, you know, they can make their own choices. I'm not your mom. I'm not your dad. And I would never want to be that. Like, and I think that's the thing, is a good library doesn't want to be your parent. Like, I'm not going to tell you what to look at and not look at. I'm not going to tell you that this book is poorly researched and this one is well researched, right? Now, let's be clear about something, too. Because, you know, it's come up like, well, this book is poorly researched and it's mostly opinion. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's true, but that's true of a lot of books that we have over in the nonfiction section. For example, we still have A Million Little Pieces in the nonfiction section. Even though we know that there are things about it that are fake, right? Even though we know it's not entirely true. I wrote a review of Rebecca Solnit's book, Men Explain Things to Me, in which I had some problems with some of the research she cited and some of the ways she was using that research. I had factual problems with it. But I didn't take it off the shelf. I wasn't like, no, this doesn't belong on the shelf. Because the thing is, people need to discover for themselves. People need to have the opportunity to discover, to look into things, and to hear things, and, you know, see what sets off alarm bells for them, and see what makes them think. And it's kind of funny because it's like, I think more than ever, we're into this thing, right? Where we're like, there's fake news, so how can you research, and how can you do this? But also, I don't think the answer to that is like, well, how do we stop fake news from existing? And it's like, that's impossible. That's not a good goal. The good goal is to get people to recognize things. The good goal is to see, you know, when someone's reading a book and there's a statistic in it that sounds very fishy, that they then look into that themselves. That's what you want. You want like an intellectually curious group of people out there. So anyway, yes, it would be censorship for me to not buy it because I don't agree with the politics of it. Now, if it was saying things that were factually true, which weren't, to a, like, a heavy, heavy degree. I mean, because here's the thing. Like, the Rebecca Solnit book quoted a study, and I looked into the study, and I was like, this is a very questionable study, right? Like, okay, here's one of my big gripes. The statistic quoted that got me on the search was the leading cause of death for pregnant women is homicide. You know, and it was kind of about the violence that women experience. Well, I wouldn't take away from that as being real. It's the study that she cited was really questionable. For example, a pregnant woman is considered, if she was with child any time in the year prior to or after, a year later, right? And so they would ask if she'd experienced any abuse. And it was like, wait a minute. You're saying that, like, a woman who was battered 11 months before she was pregnant, we count that as a battered woman who is pregnant. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Or a woman who was killed 5 months after giving birth is considered a pregnant woman? I was like, I don't know about... This is fishy. You know, there was a lot more about it. That the more you look into it, the more you're like... Well, I can see why this study has never been repeated because it doesn't really work. So what I'm saying is, though that study showed the thing that she said, you have to really fucking look into the whole methodology of the study in order to find out that, like, well, all right, factually accurate but also misrepresentative of reality is, I guess, the summary, right? No one's going to do that for every single book in the library. No one has the time to do that. No one has the ability to do that. And the real thing, that's why you got to read that book and then you got to read something else. You know, you got to read that book and then you got to read one of those crazies. I mean, if you want to learn, you're going to have to like read some shit that isn't pleasing to you. If you want to, like, know what's going on, you can't just read the stuff that you agree with. But I think this is a big thing, too, is where I'm a little cynical. I think most people just read the things that they agree with. And I think this is another big problem. The library definitely, like, you know, like the university, the library definitely has a left-leaning overall sort of skew. Right? Staff and like the admin and the people who are drawn to libraries are very left-leaning for various reasons. I couldn't even say why for sure. And I think like a university, The library wants to be a place for everybody. But if I'm only buying the things that agree with me politically, then it's not a place for everybody. And we're going to keep asking, like, how come we don't get, you know, farm boys in here reading books? And it's like, well, maybe because there's nothing that speaks to them. Maybe because the things that they're interested in, we specifically chose not to buy, right? Because it didn't agree with us. I think that's a real issue. And I also think it's an issue because, like, there's this big rallying cry out there, right, of more education, and that education's going to solve everything, which I believe less and less all the time. However, I think that what people are saying without saying is the kind of education that I believe in is the kind that will save us. You know, but education in general won't save us, right? So it's like, yeah, these hillbillies need to learn about, you know, this and that, and then everything will be great. And it's like, well, I don't think that somebody from a different life experience than you learning what you learned is going to turn them into you. And also, the goal of education should not be to turn everyone into you. The goal should be, like, they learn how to think for themselves. That's just an opinion. I don't have a study to back it up, I'm afraid. But, you know, we look around. We wonder why. How come, like, almost everyone I worked with, or I still work with, is a middle-ish age woman? How come so many of them are white? How come so many of them are single? How come so many of them are this and that? And how come so many of them are left-leaning? And it's like, I mean, we don't get people who apply for jobs who look different. Like, we don't. We don't get a lot of applicants who look different and who think differently. You know, we did this, like, personality test thing because it was like, oh, you know, well, it'll help us get along with each other and all that bullshit. And you'll, like, understand why some people are the way they are. And we took it, and almost everyone I work with falls into, like, the same category. So we're very, like, homogenized. And we wonder why, and it's like, yeah, because, you know, we do things, like, our way. I mean, we do things the way we think we should, and it's a self-perpetuating culture. And if you want to get other people in, you're going to have to, like, give them a reason to show up at the door. Now let's talk about, you know, interlibrary loan option, right? Would that be censorship or not? Because it's like, well, you can still get it. I'm not necessarily preventing you from getting it. I'm just not making it available to you. I still say yes. And here's why. Basically, I think interlibrary loan is having my cake and eating it too. I get to, like, hold my nose up in the air and say, I didn't buy this shitty book. But everyone who wants to read it still has access to it, and some other library has to buy it in order to support my community. So in other words, I'm kind of forcing another community to step in for my community. And I think that that's kind of the wrong way to do it. Because again, I'm going in with the knowledge that people are going to want this thing, and saying that I'm not going to make that available to them because of how I feel about it. And by the way, let's just point out, everything about how I feel about this is based on what I've heard. I've not read it. So I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't actually know how offensive, how wrong, how incorrect, how this and that it is. I don't know. Like, I really don't know. And no one who works in a library can be expected to know everything that's in the library. Because the thing is, your collection has to please, you know, we've got, like, I don't know, probably 200,000 people in our service area. Can any individual be an expert, or can we even, as a staff, how large a staff would you have in order to have somebody who's read everything? You know what I mean? So it's like, well, let me call over here and see if this has intellectual merit. It's not possible. So I think the interlibrary loan is a possibility, but I don't think it's I think ethically it would still be wrong. I think it would be almost worse than just not buying it, because at least if I just don't buy it, and I'm like, fuck it, and I'm not even thinking about interlibrary loan, at least that's taking a stance. You know what I mean? At least that's me saying, you know what? I'm not going to tolerate this shit here, and it's not coming here, and I don't care. At least that takes some guts. I think the interlibrary loan option is kind of a cop-out, and it's kind of like a, I don't know. The other thing is, like, is it censorship? This is something we talk about in a class I teach, too, which is Tango Makes Three, right? It's the book about gay penguins for kids. So it's like these, it's a true story, like these two male penguins were exhibiting like penguin intimacy behaviors. That's not euphemistic for sex. They were, I don't know, they were like snuggled and stuff like that, as far as I can tell. This is what I know from Tango Makes Three, and Tango Makes Three doesn't talk about like, and then Tango's two dads were like blowing each other and 69ing under the water near the tank or something. Like, for all I know, they were jerking each other off with their flippers constantly and blowing loads all over the fluffy little Tango baby. But I don't know that. I have no idea. I don't actually know. I don't know how gay these gay penguins were. How about that for the summary? I don't know if they were like, I don't know if they were just fucking getting crazy and going down on each other, or if it was like, well, they're just kind of raising this baby penguin together. But the point is, this is a book for kids, and it was a book for kids about like this little penguin named Tango, and he's got two dads. And it didn't anthropomorphize or anything, and it wasn't like, and then Tango said da-da-da-da. It just basically told what happened. There's these two male penguins who like each other and raise this baby basically as two dads. The end. And some people were offended by this. And some people were like, well, how am I going to explain to my kids gay whatever, you know? Which, that's the classic thing. Now, the classic think about the children does have a little more bearing, because you're talking about, well, this is a thing designed for children. And it's a little like, sometimes I try and take people out of the realm of, like, the gay penguins. Because it's like, who can hate a gay penguin? And I try and talk about, like, okay, there's a book called The Sad Book by Michael Rosen. And it's, like, it's a kid's book and it's a picture book. But you read it and you're like, I don't think this is really for kids. Like, it's about this guy and his son has died and he's basically going through a horrible depression. And, you know, feels very crazy and whatever. And as I'm reading this, I'm always thinking, like, wouldn't a kid just be, like, confused by this and sort of disturbed and whatever? Or there's a Shel Silverstein book, you know him, of Giving Tree / Where the Sidewalk Ends fame, and he has a book called Who Wants a Cheap Rhinoceros, and it's like a real fun, real cute book, right? But then there, you flip to a page where it's like telling you all the advantages of having a pet rhinoceros, right? And it tells you one of the advantages is like the rhinoceros will protect you when your dad's gonna hit you. And, you know, this having been written in, like, the 60s or the 70s, maybe, it's like, yeah, I guess kids like, or parents whacking their kids was not a crazy thing. But today, that's not something that would happen, right? So does that have a place in the collection still? You know, should that be, if I got rid of it, if it was, like, ripped in half and I was like, well, we got to throw it out, I probably wouldn't get a new one for that reason. Now, do I think that it's like, I think kids will eventually discover that it was at one time very common to like hit children, for parents to hit their children. But I also don't think it's like horribly sheltering them that you're like, I don't really want to have that conversation with my 4-year-old. And so sometimes I do think there's a legitimacy to, I don't really want to talk about like sex and romance with my 4-year-old. I mean, I don't know. But I'm not a parent, and whatever. But here's the thing. So what some libraries did to try and, like, you know, mitigate all this was they put Tango Makes Three in the adult section, right? In the adult nonfiction. Which I thought was really dumb. Because basically, that's saying, okay, well, if your family looks like this, if you think this way, your book is over here. And no kid is dumb enough to not notice, like, how come the book where it's like two dads like I have is over here? Or like, how come the one book with two dads is over here? Like, how come two dads is an adult topic, but, you know, a mom and a dad is not an adult topic? Or a guy going through an insane depression over the loss of his dead son. That's like, that's fine, but this is over here. It's you know, it's a double standard, right? Because it's like, yeah, I mean, there's nothing... If we have books that talk about love between, you know, male-female parents, then there should be ones that talk about love between...